Hello and welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And today we are talking about a large number of...
bits and bobs. Bobs and bits. And
not specifically Bob's bits, but
not Bob's bits. No,
close enough. But we are talking about lots of things. Now, to kick off, we mentioned last week or the week before—I forget which
one—some time ago,
in passing, the fact that Grindr has opened up to women, trans folks. The list goes on.
Yes.
So you actually have been getting some reaction to this.
Yes, I have.
So
what's
the reaction?
I've been mentioning it to some people. Well, my first reaction is that my eye still hurts, and I'm going to have to live with that for the next while. While we're making this episode, there's also cooking going on, and I got an eyeful of baked garlic fumes, and it's worse than onion. It doesn't hurt more. It's just more persistent. But anyway, so a lot of the women that I've spoken to have said... they think that's strange and awkward for a woman to go on Grindr, because a lot of the women that I've spoken to have said that men, especially men who have sex with men, need and deserve a space. And Grindr was one of the remaining spaces, because a lot of the gay bars are shutting down, and many of the gay bars that are still around are becoming a little bit more integrated. And this is a good thing, ultimately, that...
Yes.
Many of the gay bars are now really just like queer bars. They're LGBTQ spaces instead of just...
Well, queer in the sense of non-normative.
Non-normative, yeah. Exactly, yeah. But there is... It's really interesting. I've actually been hearing more straight people over the past while. I mean, I know more straight people on account of there's more straight people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I know more straight people who are sort of bemoaning the death of the queer space.
Yeah.
And they're saying that... they feel weird, like they know they can go to a gay bar, but they also know that gay men deserve a space. They deserve to have a space of their own they can go to and you know, be among each other. Just like, you know, there's community spaces for all sorts of people, and they should have community spaces to be among themselves and not have to put up their guard and not have to, you know, police their language and not have to care about identity, because everybody... Well, I mean, you're still going to have identity differences between individuals within a space. But at least on that side, you know, there's no real need for negotiating, because you know that everyone in that space is a dude or identifies as a dude and is into dudes or mm-hmm. people who identify as dudes.
Yeah.
So you've got the bases covered there.
And you don't have to... It's all about being somewhere where you go in and you're not like, okay... I'm the only homo. Oh, that guy there. That guy's a homo. Let's go over.
No,
and then
no.
Risking it if
he's just European, it turns out.
Ah, European.
Yeah.
Darn.
Yeah.
And then, but rather just being in a space where everyone's around you, you can flirt with people maybe.
Yeah.
You know, with consent, obviously. But it's all about just being in the majority instead of being constantly in the minority.
But that said, the reason why Grindr opened itself up to women is to make, because it was about, I think, a year and a half ago, they started trying to have a more trans-inclusive policy.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of being trans-inclusive without also being inclusive to women made being trans-inclusive seem half-cocked. But then the issue, I don't know, like there, it's one of those things where I neither think it is cleanly and clearly a good idea, nor do I think it is cleanly and clearly a bad idea. I think it's kind of complicated. But on the other hand, I also think it doesn't matter, because there are other apps. And I don't see any of the other apps. Like, I don't see Adam for Adam or, oh man, I can't even remember.
Hornet, Jacked.
Yeah, Jacked Scruff. And Scruff. I don't see any of the others taking on these policies in the near or distant future. So having one of the spaces becoming more open and integrated, I don't think is a problem. Now that said, that's also how Church Street slowly slid into being a gentrified...
That does remind me.
Yeah?
I'm glad you mentioned Church Street, because there's been huge developments there.
Oh?
I mean, first of all, the condos, I mean, those developments alone are pretty mammoth.
Well, that's
but, no,
Brad
the,
Lamb, yeah.
The developments I'm speaking about is the chief of police held a press conference just this past week. Were you wrapping up your comment on Grindr?
I could have gone for another couple. I mean, you know, I've always got opinions about everything. I could have gone couple minutes.
So I'll jump in with the what we're hearing. So some of our regular listeners may well remember that people are very concerned that in the 70s and 80s, two or three gay men went missing.
It wasn't 70s and 80s. No, it was like 5 years ago.
And there was another batch far more recently.
Yeah.
Who also sort of vanished. Now, the chief of police...
Of Toronto.
Yeah. Said that, you know, we're looking into it. There's an investigation into the older ones. There's an investigation into this newer batch. But, you know, trust us, they're not related. Totally unconnected incidents. Whatever you hear, there's no serial killer on the loose.
Right.
Well, that was dreadfully reassuring until such a point as now more people are showing up dead. There was a trans woman who died. She went missing, I think, in June and was found in August. The body was found, but she wasn't identified until, I think, November.
Okay.
And then there was another girl who went missing. I'm just trying to find the article here to get the names. But there's another girl who went missing recently, and the police just weren't overly active. And you can tell the police weren't overly active because the mother found out where she'd gone missing and then found the body of her daughter in a stairwell of a construction site half a block away.
Oh, my. So, two things about this. First of all, this feels unrelated to the previous case, because the previous case was mostly dark-skinned, bearded men in their early 40s of a similar build. This may be unrelated, but then that brings me to the second point, which is having a second ongoing case is worse.
Now it's four.
It's four cases.
All in the Church and Wellesley area. Okay. So it was actually Tess Ritchie, who I was referring to, 22-year-old, had gone into Cruise and Tangos. With some friends. Cruise and Tangos is one of the most popular gay bars in Toronto. It's very sort of very friendly, sort of open audience. It's not really...
Cruise in the front and Tangos in the back, I believe is how it is.
How it's divided.
Yeah, and then Tangos in the back is on Friday nights. It's ladies' night. And men are allowed in the space, but they ask that you respect that, that you try to give the women their space. And I actually think that's a fantastic policy. And they also have karaoke nights there that the drag queens come down and do karaoke. So, you know, it's the good kind of terrible. It's camp.
Yeah.
So it's kind of... Anyway. It's an Everything Goes bar. So somebody going there, that's...
I believe it was on a Friday that she was there.
Okay, yeah.
Then got out about 1:47 or something in the morning. And then they'd met a group of people, and then they'd split off. She wandered off with one of the guys they just met, and unfortunately had died after that. But the chief of police essentially has announced that they're investigating how they'd handled those investigations.
Okay.
I'm going to quote here.
There's a name for that. Internal review.
That's essentially what it is. Thingy. The investigation will involve questions and answers and facts and give me the opportunity to have more clarity on exactly what happened or what the circumstances were. What they're looking for is whether or not there are procedural training or other issues that need to be resolved by the force. Now, this is something that is coming up more and more often. We're seeing police services... in Canada. I mean, we saw it here in Ottawa. We see it in Toronto, where the community is rapidly losing faith that the police are there to protect them.
Yeah.
Apparently, it was the mother that found her daughter's body, and people were out searching. You know, people are now they've launched their own buddy program, where they have so little faith in the police that they're teaming up together not to get killed on Church and Wellesley in Toronto. Like, that is... I mean, this is Canada, for crying out loud. And the action's being taken. And what I was referring to here in Ottawa was the fact that the trans community had to fight for weeks to convince the hate crimes unit that defacing a trans mural was a hate crime.
Well, I think this
and
is...
that was about 2 or 3 years ago now, but it's
been
ongoing.
This is a bit of a different scale, though, because if you're talking about two trans women disappearing over the past year, and then their disappearance, or in one case, clear instance of murder not being properly investigated. I mean, whether or not they were a trans person, fact is somebody was murdered and the case was not picked up. It was possibly, I mean, I don't want to assume anything of anyone.
I'm not sure that Tess was trans.
Okay.
But
it was an individual, queer member of the queer community. But where was I going with this?
The point I was making and why I connected it to the mural in Ottawa is that in both cases, the community felt that police were being willfully inactive and took it upon themselves to create essentially vigilante groups to ensure that no further crime happened.
But I mean, you do see that defacing a mural and...
But it was repeatedly.
Not investigating a murder.
Yeah, I realize the scale is different, but
difference
the
scale,
response
yeah.
was much the same.
Okay,
It's that there was no belief that police would take it seriously or be there to protect them.
Right, okay.
You know, and in the case of Toronto, it's their persons. In the case of Ottawa, it was the mural. This is a huge issue.
Yeah.
It's a huge issue. Have you heard much about it?
No, this is all news to me. I've not heard any updates from Toronto either with regards to the missing men, which is, you know, not super reassuring. It's one of those situations where I don't know what's worse. Are we talking about a series of individual disappearances that are unrelated, where the police are just... I don't know if I should say systemically or systematically. I think both words actually apply in this case. Just sort of, you know, as a pattern, seeing these disappearances and going, oh, well. Or if it is a serial killer and they're just not allocating enough resources to actually
find anyone. Alona Wells, the trans woman, went missing in July.
Right.
And then I think, what was it, Tess? Jess? I just had the name a second ago. You know what? I've lost it.
But then there's
Tess Ritchie.
Okay.
But you're talking about the disappearance of Andrew Kinsman and Sylvie Messen,
yes.
who went missing earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, the four, I mean, it's stretched out over a year, but it may all be unconnected.
Yeah.
But
and it could be sort of so-called crimes of passion. It could be somebody who knew them, who had some kind of beef with them, some vendetta, and just straight up murdered them, which unfortunately does happen in the world. But the thing is, they still need to investigate that to confirm whether or not they were targeted because of some historical thing they did against somebody that they thought murder was the appropriate response, or if it was some kind of a serial incident of some kind.
Yeah.
Or even if it's just like, because with the there's five men, I think, in total, and it's just three of them, they're not sure if they should connect it or not. I do remember this about the story. But they've never found the bodies. There were men who were there, and then they weren't there, and their bank accounts are untouched, and their credit cards are untouched.
Well, that's the common thread here. All four have gone missing.
I mean, it could just be that they fell in an open manhole cover, or they fell on the TTC tracks or something like that, but that's still something that needs investigating.
Yeah.
They still need to look into that, and it could be just something benign and non-malicious, but the fact that nobody's looking into it, that's the scary part.
Oh, that, and they also, I mean, what this latest case tells us, I mean, it's so sad when someone's reported missing, they can't find them.
Yeah.
And their mother looks within a half block radius of where they're last seen and finds a body.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, just how much are the police actually looking for missing people?
Yeah.
I mean, it really does beg the question. And what the feedback we're getting online, the response from homosexual community in Toronto,
right.
is that there's no faith there that the police are there to protect them. And that's what's extremely worrying in this case. You know, you have to believe that they're there to protect you.
Do you think it's a Canada problem or a Toronto problem?
Well, like I said, I referenced the case here in Ottawa.
I mean, it's definitely more extreme in Toronto.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, let us know. We have listeners all over the country. Do you, as a member of the lesbian, gay, bi, trans community, believe that the police are there to protect you?
And also tell us where you are. Like, if you're in St. John or St. John's or the other St. John, because
Lethbridge.
There's like five, I think, St. John.
Yeah. Oh, Abbotsford.
Ooh, it goes on.
Victoria, Vancouver, wherever you are.
If you live in Nanaimo and you think the local police forces are just peachy keen, then also let us know that. Because that would be, I mean, I'd be pretty happy to know that the Nanaimo police forces are peachy keen.
Would they be provincial in Nanaimo? I don't know. I don't think they'd have a municipal service, would they?
No, I think they probably... I think they
probably
use...
Probably RCMP,
yeah. Most of the country uses the Mounties, yeah.
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 Mm. Anyway, let us know if you have faith that the police are there to protect you. Now, I want to move on from that.
We should probably go to a song, actually.
Yeah, that's a very good point to loosen the mood. Yeah. Limber up.
And maybe, like, wash some garlic fumes out of my eye.
This is true. Now, we're going to jump to the most bizarre of songs. Bjork has issued a new album. Mm-hmm. And weirdly, I don't know why, but Bjork is a bit of a gay icon.
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, you probably know more of the reasons why than I do. But Bjork has released a track called Utopia. Beautiful video. Very mesmerizing.
It reminds me of the soundtrack to Drawing Restraint, which is super obscure. You would need to be a Bjork fan to even know that she did this album. Mm-hmm. It was an avant-garde album for an avant-garde movie about a whaler. As you do. But yeah, no, it's back to her more experimental, because she started off in the punk scene. So she started off in the Sugar Cubes, and then she went on, she did her solo album, and then, you know, but she also does a lot of weird experimental music on the side. This is the weird experimental music on the side that...
Not too experimental. Don't turn the channel.
It's not Medulla. Like, Medulla was an album that she made because she wanted to make it, and she didn't care if you liked it. This is listenable.
Absolutely. Well, we're setting a high bar here at Can Queer, and we'll be back just after this. Canada's Queer Media. My name is still Luke Smith.
And I'm still Sebastian. Why are we talking like it's the beginning of the show when clearly it's
I don't
the
know, middle? Force a habit.
Force a habit.
Exactly. Now, we were talking about some very, very unsettling news.
Complicated, yeah.
Earlier, yes. Yeah. And we hope that folks still have confidence in their policing, obviously. Mm-hmm. Very important that people believe that, and for the very much case, you know, the police are there to protect citizens. So, but we're moving on to, really our show is just, you know, 40 minutes of not particularly fantastic things are happening in the world, and we're going to talk a bit about them. Terry Crews.
Yes.
I adore Terry Crews in
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Actually.
Because Terry loves yogurt.
This is true. But in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Sanchez?
Yes.
Just came out as bi.
The character or the actress?
The character.
Okay.
In the past episode. Yeah, very exciting.
I always assumed she was.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But that's not what we're talking about today. Today we're talking about the fact that Terry Crews is suing William Morris Endeavor. The William Morris Endeavor agent, Adam Bennett. Now,
okay.
So people, you know, whenever the hashtag MeToo thing happened and a lot of people came forward, in fact, Time Magazine listed the movement with a whole bunch of people as the silence breakers.
Yeah.
And that was their thing. And Terry Crews is one of those people.
Okay.
Because Terry Crews came in and said that, you know, he was surprised he got molested at 48.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because Adam Bennett had been groping Terry Crews' genitals at a party.
Right, yeah.
Weirdly enough, Adam Sandler had to come over and, like, intervene.
He's actually known as being an upstanding dude. His comedy is stale. His early comedy back in the 90s, when he first... If you go back and watch some of his stuff in the 90s, I mean, when he was still funny, he actually was fresh and funny and interesting, and his comedy, but he's always been known as being an upstanding guy.
Well, Adam Sandler is one of Adam Bennett's people. Like, he is Adam Sandler's agent.
Oh, okay.
So, for the company WME, William Morris Endeavor. Mm. Now, Terry Crews is not one of his, he's not his client.
Right.
So he complained to WME, to his own agent. He got a personal apology from the chairman of WME.
Right.
And I believe Adam Bennett at the time had been suspended.
Okay.
Now, the news breaks.
Suspended with or without pay? I mean, I know it's not the police.
I'm not
but
sure, but it was. Okay. It had been suspended. News dies down. It's a week and a half later. 2 weeks, maybe, edging on a month. You know, no one's really paying attention. Terry Crews finds out. No, sorry, Bennett took some time away from the agency.
Okay.
So he voluntarily stepped back. Except now that the spotlight has moved,
mm-hmm.
He's gone back to work.
Okay.
Scot-free, no consequence, you know?
Well, if I were to look at this from a skeptic's point of view, and if you know me, I do that sometimes. If nothing's been proven in a court of law, then, like, if there's no arrestable offense, and there might be one, mm-hmm. and there could be something worthy of an investigation, but until that time, firing somebody on the possibility that an accusation might be true is not fair. That said, they obviously should do something. They should pull them aside and say, look, you have this reputation. Even if it's unfounded, if it's not unfounded, you have a reputation, we're going to have a talking.
Well, I think a lot of it boils down is to believing the people who have come forward.
Believing the people, for sure, that is very important, but also, I mean, punishing somebody based on something that has not yet been proven is problematic as well.
It is.
It's just as problematic as refusing to believe the victim. So, I mean, it's...
This is rolling on as if nothing happened.
Yeah, that is a problem.
And if that they had, is the issue.
If they had pulled him aside, if they had talking with him, if they relieved him of a few of his clients as punishment, something. If they mm-hmm. had done something, that would have been something. Although, something had occurred to me in the past week. And I actually wanted to mention this to you, something that I noticed. And I may as well do it on the air, because why not? all of this flurry over the past, I guess, 2 months now, possibly 3 months, about sexual assault allegations. And I don't know if you remember this, but 2 years ago, Kathy Griffith sexually assaulted Anderson Cooper on live television. And he complained, and they told him it didn't matter because it was a woman doing it, and he was a gay man. You remember this?
Yeah.
And she grabbed his genitals, and it was during, like, a New Year celebration. And he had to, like, use the microphone to defend her, to defend himself from her grabby hands. And she kind of did a lighthearted apology, and then nothing came of it. And I'm a little bit disappointed that nobody's bringing this up. And I don't know what to do with this information, that, you know, a gay man's body in a public space is kind of public property. And speaking about gay men and space, you are going to do an article about Spacey.
No, actually, I was going to jump into...
See, that was a bad segue like you do.
No, I was going to talk about... oh, my God. Bryan Singer.
Bryan Singer.
Now, Bryan Singer directed one of the X-Men movies and had been drafted in to direct Bohemian Rhapsody, the biopic about Queen. The guy from Robo...
Just Freddie Robocop, Mercury, but yeah.
Roto Chicken, Robo...
RoboCop, Robot,
Robot
Chicken.
Mr. Robot. There we go.
Mr. Robot.
The guy, something Malik. Something Malik, I forget what it is.
Oh, man.
Anyway, that guy is in it. And apparently, there have been all kinds of rumors and accusations swirling around Bryan Singer. Apparently, he was absolutely impossible to work with.
Okay.
And then just didn't go into work. Mm-hmm. And then was, I believe he was fired, but don't quote me on that.
Okay.
From that movie, well, it's escalated from there. A young man called Sanchez Guzman claimed that he was in Seattle in 2013, 17 years old at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Bryan Singer was there, and there was a yacht show, and he was like, oh, let me come and show you my yacht.
Okay.
And it was actually on that yacht with just the two of them where Sanchez Guzman has, in this claim that's become public in a lawsuit, claimed a rape by Bryan Singer. And apparently Singer threatened to ruin his reputation if he told anyone. We're seeing a pattern of highly influential men threaten to destroy people if it comes out.
See, the thing is, I think nobody who's watched any movies from the 80s is alarmed by this, because this is the kind of thing that people wrote about in the 80s. If you watch bad movies from the 80s, which is about three quarters of them, this is kind of an archetype, like the skeezy Hollywood mogul who will give you an opportunity if you casting couch with them. Like, I think the world has been well prepared that, like, oh, okay, no, this, we knew it was true, we just didn't know who was doing it, and it was...
I saw a great clip from Daniel Radcliffe, and he was saying, he was talking to a good friend of his, and he was like, oh, you know, what are you doing? And he's like, what do you think of all of this Hollywood stuff? And his friend had said that she was applying to a position, and because one of the scenes may involve a bikini or topless shot, everyone applying had to send in topless footage of themselves.
Oh, my God.
And the guy, and Daniel Radcliffe is like, why? Why? And who's sitting on a collection of 30, 40 submissions of topless women? Like, you know, oh, it's so sleazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Apparently, the yacht was owned by the tech investor Lester Waters, and it was known for having parties with lots of young gay men.
Mm.
Party with the young gay men is fine. Obviously, sex assault, absolutely not. Rape, absolutely
Yeah.
Fundamentally not. But that really does beg the question now that...
And they dropped hints of it in Sense8 as well, if you remember season 2.
They also dropped hints of it in Family Guy, yet another guy.
Oh, no, Family Guy was not dropping hints. They were full on, like, don't work with this guy, he's a sexual assaulter. Like, they name names and they, oh, man, no. Yeah. They've never been subtle. But I think that's also why they're always in trouble and why they've been canceled and restarted 4 times, I think. It's ridiculous, but... They're still around. They're still chugging along. Not 28 seasons or whatever like The Simpsons is, but, you know, Family Guy, I think they're in season 14 or something.
I'm not sure. But let me go away. Not Adam Sandler. Oh, my God. What's his
Run
name?
Run a tangent, yeah.
Oh, what's his name?
Patrick Stewart.
No, the guy who does Family Guy.
Seth MacFarlane.
Seth MacFarlane.
Yes.
There we go. Absolutely.
He is the bad boy of Hollywood. But, like, what you were saying earlier about Adam Sandler, Seth MacFarlane is known for doing this as well, like, sliding up behind somebody, being like, don't work with that guy. Like, he's known for watching people's backs and keeping them safe. That, like, if he tells you something about the insides of Hollywood, he's telling you the truth.
Now
we're getting...
News stories continue to break. About Kevin Spacey.
Right.
Now, 12 men have come forward since the news broke, since he got sacked from Netflix. And I think there were 20 accusations from his time at the Old Vic. But the latest news is that royalty has also been groped. The husband of the Princess of Norway, Martha Lewis, had been groped. Yeah, they were at the Nobel Peace Prize concert in Oslo. Spacey and Uma Thurman were hosting, and Ari Ben, who has now divorced the princess, was there, and they were chatting away, and Spacey manhandled his grapes.
Front center, said, backside?
Front grapes.
Front? Oh, my.
Yeah, and was like, should we go out and have a smoke? To which Ari Ben was like, no, thank you. Like, how do you respond to that?
You say, dude, bro, oh, no. What? Bro, I. And then you walk away.
Yeah. Just I'm not really sure if Norwegian royalty would do that, but you know, we can try.
Well, I mean, I was catering it to Norwegian royalty. If you're not Norwegian, you would probably something like, brah, you know, but...
But yeah, no, the news stories continue to break.
I mean, so far it seems like Kevin Spacey's type is in front of him.
More importantly, Kevin Spacey has now become an archetype.
Yeah.
You know, he is now the symbol of dirty men in Hollywood. His career's over.
Like, yeah. You know?
And rightly so. His behavior is unacceptable.
Well, I mean, when I used to work in a gay bar, I knew guys like that all the time, and they get away with it because they know they can.
Yeah.
And the paradigm has shifted. You can't get away with it anymore.
And people still think, oh, maybe a couple of weeks in rehab and I still will. Well, Terry Crews is suing the guy that fondled him in a party. You know, it's like, you know what? No, absolutely not.
There have been stories over the years of people who said a thing or did a thing and they called the next day and apologized. And like, I've been thinking about it. Like, that was not appropriate. That is the kind of thing that you sit down, chat it out, and then it goes away. The kind of thing that is a pattern over the years that you deny until 30 people come out, that is the kind of thing, like, even as a skeptic, all right, that's the kind of thing where I'm like, okay, where there's smoke, there's fire, maybe cool off his career, maybe forever, but until you figure out exactly what's going on and to what degree, definitely make him step down. But one thing that I did hear is a lot of people were super concerned about his participation in House of Cards until a bunch of fans said that the show was based on books, and in the books he should have died a season and a half ago. So they just sort of, the writers, they're not struggling for a reason to get rid of him because it's going to shift to his wife's character, who was supposed to be the main character the entire time. It's just that Kevin Spacey got super popular and he's not popular anymore, so shift away.
Absolutely. They're doing an 8-part season, I think, once they've put it out. Starting recording in January.
Oof.
So, yeah. Now, so complicated. What are you aware of about the pink dollar?
The pink dollar is a semi-supported, semi-made-up theory about how LGBT people, especially gay white men, but not exclusively gay white men, on account of being single... or at least without children, have bigger disposable income and are more willing to spend it on nonsense and bric-a-brac that they don't need to spend it on. Exactly.
And are you aware of the rainbow tax?
The rainbow tax is the general idea that there are extra expenses involved in being an LGBT?
No, so right now...
It's not the equivalent of the pink tax.
No. Okay. Oh, pink tax. That's why you earn less because you're gay?
No. Pink tax is like... women's shampoo with like a butterfly and it's a pink bottle will cost
razors for women is three times what it costs for men. Exactly. But no, the rainbow tax is essentially the idea that gay men earn less, you know, less to the dollar than straight men.
Oh.
And it has been the case.
And because so many of them are single / unmarried for much more of their lives, they don't get all those sweet, sweet couples tax breaks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that was the case for a long time.
Yes.
And it was the case in Canada, in the United States, Australia, the UK, for decades, 30, 40 years. Every time they studied it, they all came to the same conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 10 to 20% less, 10% less, 5 to 10% less.
Last time I saw one of these studies, it was the one from, I think it was 2002, and they found that it was what in science we would call strongly bimodal, which is there's two peaks. So you have one peak that is significantly lower and one that is significantly higher. So if a gay man or an LGBT person, because they actually also study, it's also true for lesbians, but less true for lesbians. If they make above average earnings, they make significantly above average earnings.
Yes.
So the CEO of Apple, I can never remember his name, but he's a gay man, mm-hmm. and he's pretty wealthy. So it's the idea that if you look at the average income, it actually is a little bit lower than the average income for the non-LGBTQ population. But if you cut off the second mode, if you ignore the super wealthy, that number drops down to something like 20-30% less. So there's some math in there, but yeah.
And this is essentially what they found, that in every study done on economic income for Canada, the US, Australia, UK.
Netherlands, France, and Germany as well?
I'm not sure about them.
Probably.
But, lesbians earn a smidge more than straight women
mm-hmm.
on average. They can't explain why, but lesbians earn a smidge more than straight women.
Okay.
And gay men have always earned 5 to 10% less.
Right.
In every study.
Right.
No matter what you're studying.
So at least 5 to 10, possibly
census
more.
Data, could be economic reports.
Okay.
They've consistently found in multiple demographics the same 5 to 10%.
Okay.
Until now.
Okay.
Which is clearly where I was going.
Oh, okay.
A recent study, a PhD student out of the University of Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee, studied the National Health Interview Survey data, which for the first time has asked sexuality. So it is a spectrum of data that hadn't been accessible for that piece of information before.
Right.
And what they found is that, you know, as we know, lesbians were earning slightly more, but now they found that gay men are earning slightly more than straight men.
Okay.
And they can't explain why.
Well, I mean, so this is the science side of me. Mm-hmm. There's something very important that a lot of these studies don't do, which is called peer matching. So if you were to take all the lesbians who took maternity leave and pair them, compare their income to all the straight women who've taken maternity leave, and then compare their data.
You say that. And I'll quote you here.
Oh, they did peer matching.
We double and triple check the data set for other patterns that would indicate some fundamental error or problem and found none.
Okay.
We subjected the gay male earnings premium to a host of extra tests to see if we could make it go away.
Yeah.
Maybe it was something else. Nope. And it went from earning on average 10% less than straight men to earning on average 10% more than straight men in the last 5 years, and they can't explain why there's been this huge jump. Now, there are some theories about how, with the cultural shift across the States and in the rest of the Western world, gay men in working spaces are far more acceptable. You're far less likely to be turned down for a promotion based on your sexuality than you were before, more access to benefits.
So the looking at the gender data for men and women, something that comes up again and again is one of the reasons why men typically earn more than women is men go into high-earning jobs more often. Mm-hmm. You get more men in the tech industry. You get more men in computer sciences, software engineering, design, app design, video games, all the behind-the-scenes stuff in the movie industry. Some of that is due to lack of opportunities that women are applying but not getting hired. But some of it is just this is a known thing. There's more men going into the STEM fields. And so, of course, more men end up in the STEM fields earning more in the long run. So I wonder about what the effect of two things. First of all, Silicon Valley. So the software industry has, generally speaking, been very queer positive since the 2000s. So one of the founding members of Facebook is openly gay. Several of the upper-ranking members of Google are openly gay. And Google is actually a very queer-positive organization in general. Yeah. So that could be dragging up the numbers. The other thing is, with all the economic buffoonery that's been happening more or less on and off since 2008, gay men, well, LGBT people in general, are more likely to be socially mobile. So they're more capable of just saying, there's better jobs in Edmonton. And they're a little bit more comfortable just uprooting themselves, which is actually something that has been studied before about the geographic mobility of the LGBTQ population.
Well, the study was based on a large federal survey.
Right.
So, huge data set that was previously inaccessible.
Right, right, yeah.
So it's across multiple economic ranges, multiple mm-hmm. areas, multiple industries.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I mean, they said it was an earnings penalty, and that's now an earnings premium, and they can't explain it. We'll just have to see what happens next.
Really. One of the other things that came out, this was 2012, I believe. I would have to double check. I haven't read this study in a long time, but somebody was trying to see if there are any patterns for intersectionality that could be a positive. And they actually found that in the American banking industry, black openly gay men who are visibly gay, so gay men who act like gay men, for lack of a better term, if you are gay and openly gay and black, your earning potential in the American banking system is actually significantly higher. That there's this weird intersectionality thing where a double, for some reason, a double indemnity turns into a positive. There is a glass ceiling, so they hit a ceiling at some point in time that no black gay man has gone above in the banking system in America, but they shoot up very quickly and they earn more on average. And they could explain what that was all about either, that there's this weird, some like intersectionality by definition is unpredictable and weird. You get one minority, you get a second minority, you smush them together, you get unexpected things popping out. And this is one of the things that, now this is for the banking system. And for black gay men,
mm-hmm.
so we're very specific here. I don't think they've been able to reproduce it somewhere else. So it might be something specific about that environment. But there's always weird and interesting things going on when you overlap the sort of sexual minority population with economics and promotions and geography. And there's all sorts of stuff that we just don't understand because the data hasn't been available. Like, we're going to learn weird things yeah. over the next decade, for sure.
They've essentially said, this is interesting. We're looking forward to other people also looking into it. and on that note,
reproducibility is the absolutely. Most important thing.
So you chose So-Called as the next musician that we're going to play.
Mm.
And we've opted for the green dress
right.
from the So-Called Yiddish album.
Well, you opt album. For the green dress.
I like that. I like the song. But tell us a little bit about So-Called.
I mean, I just discovered him today, and I'm going to be looking into him a lot more. But he, sort of based out of Toronto.
Montreal, I believe.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It is Montreal. But there's a major scene that's happening in the sort of Montreal-Toronto corridor. Mm-hmm. So whenever...
Except nothing in the corridor.
Nothing in the corridor. Yeah, no. It's
nothing's happening in, like, Windsor and Ottawa.
No, yeah, Windsor is outside the corridor. Whatever, like, Kingston is what you meant to say. So, or Tweed. There are, like, things that are paired between those two cities. Anyway, it's an interesting trend over the past maybe 20 years or so, like Lemon Bucket Orchestra, where mm-hmm. there's a fusion between Eastern European style and some kind of Western style. So Lemon Bucket Orchestra is kind of traditional gypsy-style music with punk influence.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy does Yiddish Eastern European music with hip-hop. But this musical is just the Yiddish style. But actually, when I listened to his hip-hop earlier, I was actually fairly pleased with it. It had that kind of, like, kind of mildly, like, Gorillaz B-sides where mm-hmm. were nice hip-hop, or Deltron 3030, if you're familiar with that album. You may not. I'll play it for you later. You're going to...
All right. Well, whilst you listen to this, we'll be back at some more weird studies that we've discovered explaining gay men. And we'll be back just after this.
Been 30 Jahre. Oh, das Reuter, was ist nicht so mies? Dort, in der Privosmark, Stoff gekäuft war mein grüner Kleid. Etwas darf wird poschet und schön. A Troppland winkelt in der Finsternisch. Grün soll der Frühling bringen ihm zu mir. A Säufel mich war mein grüner Kleid. Weine von dem größten Platz. Tag geschwitzt bei der Maschine. Mit den Seiten dreht sich mein Kleid. Tate Tag gelacht und gespeit. Mama, dafür nicht geguckt auf mir. No, wenn ihr heute sonst verbessert. Mit der Futter von der Bankleid.
And welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. And
hello,
we're still who we said
back
we were
to
earlier.
Canadians queer media.
You're listening to community radio. I like doing radio voices every now and then. Hello and welcome. All right, so the University Health System Research Institute of North Shore University Health Systems Research Institute. Wow, is that ever a tongue twister? I don't even, I mean, that's just the name of the place here. I'm going to Google and see where it is. Because, I mean, that's never a good sign. It's in Chicago.
Okay.
Chicago metropolitan area. So it's the North Shore University Health System Research Institute. Wow.
Why is North Shore such a struggle?
I don't know. I'm anyway, whatever. The
it's because you're Welsh.
It's true. And I live in the south of Wales, so the idea of a North Shore is just barbaric. but no, they've identified two regions and two specific chromosomes, which are different between men that are gay and straight.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So they believe it's not the gay gene.
Okay.
They talk to 1,077 gay men.
Do they?
1,231 straight men.
Do they give the location?
Well, it was from Chicago, but no. most of the men were European.
I mean, the location of the chromosome.
Yeah, they do.
Because chromosomes have
coordinates. They used a genome-wide association study. I mean, they didn't give the chromosome. Well, maybe it's SLITRK5 region of number 13.
Okay.
And the TSHR region of chromosome 14 have been. Although, weirdly, the TSHR region of chromosome 14 has been linked to thyroid issues.
It's 13 and 14, they said?
Yeah. Oh,
that's weird.
SLITRK5
okay.
of 13
okay.
and TSHR, the thyroid stimulating hormone receptor of chromosome 14.
Okay.
They're different sizes.
So are they going to be, you know, everyone in my family who's queer also has thyroid disease. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
Huh. I don't have thyroid disease and I'm gay.
Well, I mean, maybe if you believe in yourself.
Clearly, the issue here is a lack of belief. Maybe you are gay by virtue of TSHR chromosome 14.
Maybe I'm just not applying
and
myself.
I am gay through virtue of SLITRK5 chromosome 13. I'm a chromosome 13.
Well, there's still the XQ series. So XQ, I think it's XQ21. The X and Y chromosome, the coordinates are much easier to pin down. So Q just means like the bottom half, and X is just the X chromosome, and there's just the 21st allele from the center.
Yeah.
But anyway, for the longest time, the X chromosomes were believed to be the main culprit. That said, nobody ever believed that a behavior as complicated as sexual preference and sexual identity would exist on a single gene. Mm-hmm. That is super unlikely.
Well, they found it on two.
They found it, well, plus all the ones that they think they found in the past.
This is true.
So there is a thing in evolutionary biology for our listeners. It's called The Phenotypic Gambit, and it is really, it's the monkey wrench. So the generally speaking, the way that the phenotype, so that's your physical appearance, works, is you have a gene, and then the gene codes a protein, and the protein is an enzyme, and it breaks things apart, or it builds things, or something like that. So you have a, you know, a gene for a protein, and the protein makes your red blood cells, and if that gene doesn't work, you get sickle cell anemia. We understand the mechanism there. No one has ever been able to figure out the link between a gene and a behavior. And the phenotypic gambit is just an assumption that all biologists have taken because we can't explain anything otherwise, that there is a link between a gene and a behavior. Nobody understands the mechanism. No, and one of the things is in this, in science, you can't say you understand something until you explain the mechanism, right? So there's a lot of things in science where they say, well, we're not really sure. And you get under the hood and you realize they're like 99% like just positive as to what's going on. That missing 1% is the mechanism. And, you know, all the other stuff is going on. So, I mean, this is super interesting to me, considering I have a background in science.
I thought it was funny because they've found another thing.
Yeah. Well, that could be yet another influence, because who was it? It was in the early 2000s. There was an evolutionary psychologist who pinned down, I think, over 30 possible mechanisms that could cause somebody to be straight or gay. Or to be attracted to one gender or to whoever they're attracted to, really. And just simple things like if you can't detect pheromones clearly, and you just detect human pheromone in general, then the pheromone detection part of sexual arousal will just get fired off anytime somebody who smells nice comes along. That's just like one possibility out of the entire range of things. And then if you're talking about physical attraction, like, the visual center is complicated as, oh my, being able to tell like a glass from a person, there's a huge complicated visual, you know, mechanism in there, but how your eye and your brain does that and how you determine an attractive person from a non-attractive person, and then throw on top of it the fact that from 100 paces, it's really hard to tell a man from a woman, unless they're using like cultural gender cues, like they're wearing a dress or they're wearing, I don't know, a cowboy hat or something like that. It's really hard, and I don't know, it's just this interesting, complicated story. I mean, this stuff is great. I think this is fantastic. Just because, like, in my universe, this is just like, well, there's another thing to throw on the pile.
Absolutely. I mean, it almost feels like they're just adding a list of, I mean, who knows, maybe the North Shore Health Institute research place will give us more information.
Although the main thing is, until we figure out how a gene turns into a behavior, we have no idea what we're talking about.
This is true.
This is a huge deal.
Now, one man who may know what he's talking about is the one Dr. Ryan Scotes from Birmingham City University. Dr. Ryan Scotes became a doctor.
Scotes sounds like a bad word.
Through his PhD.
It's a euphemism.
He's a sociologist, and he has his PhD in Ménagerie.
Oh.
Yes. I'm using euphemism here for our younger audience.
I'm sure his PhD is in, like, behavioral, like, sexual behavior or cultural studies or...
But he has a PhD in threesomes.
Well, his...
Area of focus was...
His thesis was on threesomes.
I assume he has a PhD in sociology, but okay. He focused on ménage à trois. And as a result, what he discovered
it could be is really interesting.
This is true.
All right.
But what he discovered was now that young men find a male-male-female combo more normal than a female-female-male combo.
Okay.
And a lot of that, they're saying it has to do with the fact that the gay community is seen as more accepting. And we've also talked about, like, bro jobs and how heteroflexible is a new term. We were making fun a couple of weeks ago about how scientists discovered bisexuality again.
This, to me, just feels like we're rediscovering something we've already known a dozen times over through history. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you're familiar with the sex before dawn hypothesis. And it was basically a series of, it was an anthropologist, a historian, and an evolutionary biologist, and they all worked together basically trying to ask the question, what did sexuality look like in the Stone Age? Mm-hmm. And something that kept coming up again and again and again is, why does it take a woman, on average, 2 to 3 times longer to achieve orgasm than a man? And the only thing they could, not only that, but if a woman has multiple sex partners, like, in a row, like a threesome or, like, group sex of some variety, her fertility increases with each subsequent partner. So what's up with that? And the only thing they could come up with is maybe we're meant for, you know, at least among the young and adventurous, you know, maybe peak fertility happens when you have multiple people in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So this is nothing new. They also invented the term Flintstonization, which is beautiful.
But it's really interesting. Essentially, it could just be that some people are more willing to talk about it now than before.
Yeah.
Behavior may not have changed at all.
Yeah, probably not.
But the fact that they're willing to tell a PhD student in Birmingham City University, it could be the big difference.
England has been studied for a while now that they're, the men in England are changing what it means to be masculinity faster than almost anywhere else on Earth. And there's a whole bunch of theories as to why. And one of them is just cultural upheaval. The empire died, and now they have to figure out what do you do after the empire is dead. And every culture that used to be, like the Ottoman Empire and the Romans and the Latvian Empire used to be a thing. I learned about this sometime recently, that the Latvian Empire, that existed. Anyway, after empires collapse, people need to figure out what to do next. And this seems to be England's thing, is just, you know,
Brexiteering and forward-thinking gender fashion.
Yes!
I like
yes.
it.
Yes!
Now, somebody who's
well, except been, for the Brexiteering, I'm into it.
Somebody who is very fashion-forward is Sam Sparrow, who will be playing us out with Christmas in My Heart.
Although he's Australian, not British.
He is Australian. Yeah. Fantastic. Speaking of Australia, passed equal marriage laws.
Yes, they
this
did!
Last week, we wish we would have spent more time on it. Congratulations to Australia. Good job, well done.
You are now in 2008.
Welcome to this century from your friends across the great pond.
Welcome to last decade.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's all we have time for. I've been Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian. Thank you for listening.
I know it's been a long, long year, and I thank God that I'm still here, and I hope I'll find some Christmas in my heart. I hope your troubles are far behind you. I hope your loved ones are right beside you. And I hope you'll find some Christmas in your heart. All the stars are sparkling up above. I'll light a candle in the name of love. I see the people rushing round. They won't stop until the perfect gift has been found. And I wonder if they have Christmas in their hearts.